Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio, which is a service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. And we are continuing our exclusive and very thought-provoking and inspiring series with Dr. Michael Armour of SLDI. As I've mentioned on the previous episode, I encourage you to go back and listen to the first episode as we've kicked this extensive series off each week with Dr. Mike. For decades, Dr. Mike Armour has compiled an exceptional leadership record in a far-ranging field of many of endeavor. Today, the cumulative wisdom gained from such broad experience puts him in constant demand as a keynote speaker, executive coach, inspirational trainer in management, leadership, and cultural transformation. And businesses literally of every size seek out Dr. Mike to help him develop more professional leadership teams. You know, he founded his flagship entity, Strategic Leadership Development International, as we mentioned last week, or SLDI, and its Leader Perfect services to help companies and individuals achieve peak performance. He's also an author, as we've mentioned, who has written about people management, culture, as well as diversity for over 30 years. And, of course, releasing the second edition of the most widely read book in corporate America, Leadership and the Power of Trust. We're going to continue our conversation here with Dr. Mike, joining us live and direct from Dallas, Texas. Dr. Mike, thank you very much for joining us once again on the program. A pleasure to have you with us. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's a joy to be back. I'm looking forward to our visit.
As am I. These are terrific conversations, and I think they're so helpful for people and so relevant and topical. Last week, we talked about SLDI and its Leader Perfect team. Let's see if we can break it out a little bit, and maybe you can tell us how the firm initially got started and some of the unique services it provides.
Well, it got started at a point that I was ready to make a major career transition, to move away from being in leadership roles myself to helping people who were either preparing for leadership roles or moving in that direction. And really, the genesis of the idea came about around 1991 or 92. For a number of years prior to that, I had just given my time to a lot of colleagues and friends who were in demanding leadership and executive roles, who were asking me for advice, counsel, just to be a listening ear to help them critique some ideas they were considering. And I had done that pro bono since the late 60s. About 92, I was reading a business article that talked about an executive coach. I had no idea what an executive coach was, but as I read the article further, I thought, you know, that's really what I've been doing with these people for years. And from that point forward, I decided that when I made a major transition away from what I was doing then, that I would like to start a leadership development firm that included executive coaching but was far broader than just executive coaching. I had developed myself as a leader through a lot of different types of experiences. Some of them were mentoring relationships. Some of them were training experiences. Some of them were on the job experience in demanding roles with someone beside me who knew the ropes, who could guide me through things. And so I realized that my own leadership capabilities had been formed in a multifaceted way, and that I wanted to provide that same kind of multifaceted option to people who turned to my firm for the leadership development that they might see as needed or essential. So in 2001, I pulled the trigger on that after having not only considered it for years, but actually had begun to build a reference trail, had formalized the working relationships with people still in a pro bono situation, so that once I stepped into doing it full-time as a professional, earning fees for it, I could point people back to these whom I had worked with and use them as references to give new clients some confidence in this new guy, new kid on the block. So that was how it all got started in 2001. And very quickly, we landed some very significant contracts. I surrounded myself with a number of people who were veteran coaches and veteran leaders themselves. In fact, those people who became part of the affiliation with me had to have at least 5 years of coaching experience and had to have held something at or close to a C-level responsibility in corporate America for a number of years, so that they could bring both on-the-job understandings of the challenges of leadership to their proven record as coaches. So we built a team of those people around me. We were working with Fortune 100 companies, a number of very large companies here in the Dallas area, as well as working with a lot of startups and a lot of mid-sized family businesses that were just going through the growing pains of building a family business or any private business for that matter. So that was really the origin of it. Began in 2001, stumbled a little bit out of the blocks because I think I may have mentioned last week, I started the firm just at the first of the summer ahead of the 9/11 tragedy in September. And companies took a few months to recover from what 9/11 did to travel plans and even to the confidence people had in the future direction of the economy, the immediate future. Once that began to settle, then our business really took off, and by 2005 or 6, we were doing very, very well. Today, I've scaled it back quite a bit. Over the years, I became involved in starting a subsidiary in Africa where we did leadership training and management development work for everyone from national government offices, training for parliamentarians, and for a lot of corporations, banks, IT companies, others in particularly East Africa, but we worked across the mid-belt of Africa as well. During that period of time, I really didn't pay much attention to the American side of the business. And when I finally decided to pull back from the venture in Africa, I decided to narrow the focus of the company a little bit so that I was taking on engagements that I would not need quite as large a team to fulfill. By then, a number of my team members were ready to retire. A couple had unfortunately passed away. And so the decision was to be more focused and a little bit more of a boutique operation rather than the very large operation we had once been, but still drawing on all that experience we gained in those days when there were 19 or 20 of us working as an affiliation.
That's fantastic. That's a great story in terms of how it all came together. And thanks for sharing with that, Dr. Mike. Currently, you're working with top-notch College of Nursing and Health Sciences, which I think is sensational. From your perspective, Dr. Mike, what are the most significant leadership challenges right now that universities and colleges are facing today?
That is really an interesting question because when we think of academics and particularly when we think of universities, the first thing that comes to mind is not usually leadership. And yet I have said for ages, and I'm a former college president myself, and this is where I first began to realize this, I think that the presidency of a major university, a university with, say, at least 1,000, 2,000 students, is perhaps the most challenging leadership position in America today. And the reason is the role of a university president has changed so much over the course of the 20th century and into the 21st century that that person in that role is faced with challenges that are somewhat unique to that particular type of organization. You know, back in the 19th century, in the early 20th century, the president was sort of like the proprietor. Everything was an extension of what the president wanted to accomplish, what his vision was. And in those days, it was usually a his. We were still not seeing a lot of women leading universities other than women's colleges. But it was a very much a proprietorship kind of leadership model. But then as leadership styles in industry and government, business, other places changed in the 20th century, the same began to happen with university leadership. Because what makes the job so demanding today is that the president is not really the CEO in the way that we think of a CEO in the corporate world. The president is the facilitator who maintains the collaboration and consensus and concerted unity of a lot of factions, each of which are power centers in the university. You've got the student government. You've got the faculty senate. You've got the board. You've got the athletic association. You've got the donor community. If it's a church-related school, you've got the denomination and its leadership. You have all of these power centers who think they have a right to a major voice in what the university does, how it goes about its mission, even what its mission should be. And in the midst of that, you've got this fellow called the president, this woman called the president, who is trying to mediate all the different priorities and visions that are within the power structures, all of whom are essential for the university to be healthy and to have a solid future. And so it takes a lot of people skills. It takes a tremendously thick skin, because there will be plenty of people who are in influential positions in one of these segments of the community who will be quick to second guess and openly second guess things that you do or decisions that you make. It takes someone who's willing to put in just countless hours moving from one situation to another in order to keep the flow of this mediated leadership working smoothly. So the leadership of a university is a challenge to begin with. Now today, separate and apart from the role that the president plays, there are major challenges that our universities are facing, not the least of which is that we have a shrinking college-age population. One of the reasons that you've seen universities go to alternative forms of delivering their classes, particularly the online virtual degree programs, is the ability to reach older adults with something that they want to capitalize on from an educational standpoint, people who do not feel that they can pull up stakes and go to a campus. And their dollars for tuition are needed because the number of students coming out of high school is shrinking and will continue to shrink until the mid-20s before it even starts to turn around. And there will be a number of smaller colleges that will not survive the next 3 or 4 years because they are only marginally profitable at present. And with tighter competition for students, if they don't find a way to pull in students out of a much smaller pool to recruit from, they're simply not going to have the legs to continue. And one of the things that many of these smaller college campuses and university campuses face is that they are not well endowed like the major universities. You know, there are voices around today saying that universities have too much money. They ought not to be allowed to build up the endowment that they have. And so some large universities are having to deal with that emerging political challenge that's coming from various quarters. But the fact of the matter is I sit on the board of a small university. That's why I'm very conversant with these things that are going on. But I can tell you that in economic downturns, it is because we have an endowment that we are able to stay afloat, because donations may not be as high. Student enrollment may pull back because more parents feel they just can't justify the cost in their present income situation. And so endowment is really critical as the buffer that allows you to get through the times that are difficult. So being good stewards of the endowment is a board responsibility. Finding students is a challenge for coaches, a challenge for all of the departments to help with the recruiting effort to bring students in. And then there's just the general sense that perhaps university educations are not worth what they once were. So many of the people graduating with degrees that probably were not wisely chosen, going out and finding it very difficult or impossible to find jobs, even though they have a college degree, that's changing the whole PR relationship for universities. And so there's an image problem about the value of higher education itself that's having to be addressed is part of that leadership challenge of universities and colleges. So the school that I'm working with right now has a very forward-looking leadership, and they have consistently tried to work within a well-thought-out, well-designed five-year plan. Their last five-year plan came to a conclusion at the height of COVID, and so they were not really able to do all the focus group work and the facilitated meetings that are necessary to put a plan together. Therefore, they just extended the old plan, and then the first of this year, I began to work with them to pull together facilitated sessions with students, with faculty members, with administrators, to get a sense of where they saw the opportunities and the pitfalls looming for the next 4 to 5 years. Where are the things that we need to be prepared to exploit? What are the things that we need to be prepared to avoid or hold at arm's length because they are not productive to where we want to take the school? And to look at where medical technology, in this case, it's a nursing college within a major university, a well-known national university, where is the medical world going? What are the changes that we need to make in our curriculum over the next 5 years so that our alumni are bringing relevant skills to the medical community? So, you know, just in quick summary, those are just a few of the challenges that fall back on the shoulders of leadership to meet in the university world today.
That's incredible. That's really incredible. I know this work is such a blessing for you and brings you such great blessing, Dr. Mike. It's really extraordinary, and I hope our audience is really allowing this to absorb and sink in that you are really all in when you work with your clients. You have this ability to come at things from so many different angles, and you like to take on challenges and dissect it and find ways to make things happen. And I think it's not a cookie cutter approach with you. If it doesn't work, we'll find a way to make it work and to customize it for the clients and the individuals, regardless of the field of endeavor, what it is they're working on, what their hopes, dreams, and desires are. And I think that's extraordinary. Let's talk a little bit about maybe another example of a project that SLDI undertook, you know, sort of that before and after scenario of how things worked out.
Well, I could talk about that in terms of either individuals, or I could talk about it in terms of a company. if I were to look at an individual case, it would be with a woman that I was working for, a Fortune 100 company. She had been hired from another industry at a level just below the sea level because she had some expertise, was nationally known for her expertise in a field that the company that hired her really needed. I was brought in to be her executive coach when she had been on the job for about 5 or 6 months. When I met with her the first time, she was very upfront and straightforward about the fact that she felt like she had made the mistake of her career by accepting this position. And as I let her expand on her feelings and why she had reached that conclusion, it was very clear that this culture within the new company was not at all what she had anticipated looking at it from the outside. And it wasn't that it was a hostile culture or an undesirable culture. It was just not a culture that she knew how to navigate her way through. And she had navigated to the top of some very big companies because she was able to work within their culture and attain what they needed her to achieve in the role she took on. So suddenly realizing that she had no way how to maneuver this culture had actually crushed her self-confidence, and she was regretting she had bought a home and moved halfway across the country and brought her family halfway across the country from a community they liked well in order to take this position. I felt that she had the ability to make the accommodation to the culture that she needed to make. And so we went to work. At that time, I had coached probably 20 other people in that company, so I knew its culture very well. And we went to work helping her understand how to maneuver through the culture that she now faced. As that work continued, I could see the confidence beginning to build. Long story short, within 2 years, she was a member of the C-suite. And 2 years after that, the local business journal here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area named her as the female executive in the Metroplex to watch for the future because she was doing such a remarkable job and was making such a mark that they identified 10 women who were extraordinary in their leadership and executive skills and were people to watch for the future. And they made her the number one, gave her the number one ranking in that group and made her the centerpiece of their feature story on that. So that's one that I've been particularly proud of. From a company standpoint, one of my clients was a longtime friend who had built up a mortgage banking company to have 4 branches in the region, about 16 loan officers. And as he looked at retirement, we considered a number of different strategies that he might pursue for making his exit. Finally struck on a plan with him and his 2 partners that we would rapidly grow the company over the next 4 or 5 years so that it was a regional powerhouse in the mortgage industry and would be an attractive buy for a regional bank that wanted a mortgage arm but did not want to take the time or expend the energy and money to build one. And so for the next 4 to 5 years, I worked with them consistently week by week by week, many days a week on occasion. And we expanded to 16 branches with over 85 loan officers, doing about $200 million of mortgages per month. And really good mortgages. In fact, when the collapse came in 2008-09 in the mortgage industry, they only took back one mortgage because they made mortgages that were in the interest of the home buyer. They would not put people in a mortgage that there was a chance people would get into trouble with if the economy went south. So they were very principled, very upright, very moral people, but really good at what they did. And sure enough, we found the suitor and a regional bank that had recently transitioned from being a credit union to being a more typical bank, was looking for a mortgage arm and saw the quality of what they had done and bought them for a very good price. So there's a case of a very multidimensional involvement, because I was shadowing the CEO and giving him feedback on the meetings he conducted. I was coaching a lot of the new managers they hired in. We're helping them screen their back office personnel and evaluate their needs for further training, and helping them develop the training programs for them, and consistently keeping my finger on the strategic plan we had worked out and being sure that we were staying accountable to what everyone had agreed to.
That's sensational. That's really, thanks for sharing that story. It gives people a good understanding perspective of how the work is actually done. And, you know, looking forward to it, coming up next week, we're going to be talking, we're going to do some recapping, and we'll be talking about the latest book as well. We've got a couple of minutes here, I'd say maybe 2 minutes left. Is there another example, perhaps, a case study that you might want to share with us of how you were able, Doctor, to take an individual or a group or a company from point A to point B in this way that you just described so eloquently?
Well, one of the places that I'm often asked to come in and help a company is a family-owned business that has been family-run for two generations, maybe a third, and the time has come to pass the baton to the next generation. And there have been several of these where there were family problems that were clouding the business problem, because family disputes were coloring the confidence the parents had in which of their siblings should be put in the leadership role to come. And so I was doing as much mediation in family disputes as in helping the company get a clarity of what its leadership needs would be in the next 4 to 5 years, and then effecting this transition. And those have gone very well, because the people were willing to frankly face the facts as I brought them to them, to look at themselves and admit where they had, out of family favoritism or family protection, had not addressed some issues that they needed to address in their own relationships, and those problems in the family relationships were spilling over into the business. And we were able to bring about some reconciliation within the family that then allowed the business transition to go forward smoothly. So that's the kind of thing that not everyone gets the chance to do in the line of work I'm in, but I find it particularly rewarding, because then you have a healthier company and a healthier family that you're able to facilitate.
Our special guest today on this episode of Close Up Radio, as we're continuing our series together, Dr. Michael Armour of SLDI, Strategic Leadership Development International, and its Leader Perfect services to help companies and individuals achieve peak performance. Also, author has written books about people management, culture, and diversity, and has written about this for over 30 years, and about to release the second edition, most widely read book in corporate America, Leadership and the Power of Trust. Again, the website to connect with is www.leaderperfect.com. Dr. Mike, always a pleasure, and looking forward to continuing the conversation right here on Close Up Radio at the same time next week. Thanks for joining us and sharing your wit and wisdom so eloquently, as you always do. Appreciate you being with us today.
Enjoyed it immensely. Thank you. Look forward to seeing you next week.
You as well. You take care and be well, and we'll be right here waiting for you. Dr. Mike Armour. It's always a pleasure chatting with him, and always a pleasure having you with us here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, we'll be back in about 30 minutes with another great guest. Stay tuned. Till then, have a terrific day, and bye for now. 10 seconds.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.